Even Unseen Stars Still Burn. Written by The Hero Complex. Narrated by Rhea314. Phandom, the Husky and His White Cat Shizun. By Meat Bun Doesn't Eat Meat. Rating, teen and up audiences. Creator chose not to use archive warnings. Relationship, Chuwaning / Moran. Somehow, the light from the rift makes its way to the garden levels, though the orbital mirrors block the actual rift from sight. Moran feels it as he drags barrels of soil additives from the various storerooms, like a ghost brushing its fingers against the back of his neck. He doesn't try to shake off the sensation. You either outgrow that impulse fast on Sisheng Peak, or you spend your life twitching and scratching your skin raw. Even when he passes down the long hall, out of the main chamber, and feels those ghostly fingers dig into his skin before vanishing. The rift just likes to let you know it's around, that's all. Yeah, well, the rift can go fuck itself, he mutters, as he hoists the current barrel up the stairs to the cauldron settled at the end of a huge, rustling field of soybeans. The glass dome overhead gleams as a mirror adjusts its angle. With whatever it wants, just leave me alone. He heaves the barrel into place and jams the hookups from the cauldron into the plugs at its base. Counts back from 20, hears the satisfying double click, that means he got the hookups right on the first try, then steps back as the sour, beery-smelling additives pour into the cauldron. 9 down, countless hundreds left to go. Moran runs his hand over his sweaty hair. He needs another shave before classes start again, or there's a shitstorm in his future, and clomps down the stairs, back towards storeroom 96, soil additives, fish blood soil mixes, and hose. He learned a long time ago no one else thinks the door label is funny. Might still have the bruises from when he dared point out the label in less than receptive company. But he's not thinking about that particular kind of company, the same way he's not thinking about the rift shedding its cancerous light over the entire system. He's thinking about getting the rest of the soil additives in place before the end of his shift. And then he's thinking about the leftover wontons in his fridge unit. After that? Nothing at all. When his work is done and his wontons are eaten, Moran is going to collapse face first into his bed and sleep for at least 13 hours straight. If he is very lucky, he'll wake up in time for his next shift, and he won't be hungover anymore. You wouldn't be hungover if you hadn't decided to outdrink the delegates from Rufeng Station, Shemeng shouts, his imagined version loud enough to make Moran swear and cover his ears. No one asked you to show off. It's your own damn fault you're miserable now. All right, Meng Meng, all right. Moran palms the lock and slips into the storeroom, breathing in the warm, peaty smell all the storerooms share, regardless of what they're actually storing. The thing is, just the presence of the Rufeng Station delegation, and doesn't that just trip off the tongue, meant someone had to show off. Especially after one of the delegates asked if all the beer on Sisheng Peak was as awful as the swill in their drinking bulbs. What was Moran supposed to do? He couldn't fight the guy. Even with Shui Meng so red he looked boiled, Uncle would have been upset, and Rufeng would have started whining about trade sanctions. Not to mention how Chuwaning would have reacted as soon as he got back. No, Moran's only option was to propose a drinking contest, and then try to get the entire delegation as shit-faced as humanly possible. Mission accomplished. Of course, then he couldn't find his own room, and woke up with a mouth that tasted like where shit went to die, 20 minutes after his shift in the garden levels started. Not his best idea. Not his best morning, either. He did get a glance at the delegation earlier, on his way to the lift, and they looked twice as awful as he felt, so he's still counting it as a win. Only idiots would call a hangover this bad a win, yells Shuemeng, before mercifully shutting up. Moran pulls the next barrel out of its slot and starts to haul it down the hallway, through the soft green stalks of bamboo lining either side. Some of the upper quadrant stations have their AIs do the grunt work, but Uncle's a big believer in everyone on Sisheng Peak pulling their own weight. Everyone gets an assignment, and everyone does it. Even if you're the station leader's own beloved nephew, you still work in the garden levels, or on station repairs, or transit quarantine, while also keeping an eye out for rift incursions trying to eat any ships that pass too close, or the station itself. Now Moran shivers. Chu Wanning's first words come to mind. Some of the few words he ever shared with Moran that weren't cold, disapproving, or furious. Or all three, because Chu Wanning's efficient like that. When I tell you, Moran, that mass starvation is the least of the Rift's horrors, I want you to understand how bad it could be, and how important it is we stay vigilant. Always that. Back then, Moran had been a scrawny kid from one of the oldest, shittiest ships in the lower systems. His bones were pretty much the consistency of gravel thanks to growing up under such low gravity, and he didn't have any of the implants that would let him use Sisheng Peak's systems, let alone talk to the medbay AI that gave him the first booster shots of his life. He'd hung on every one of Chu Wanning's words like they were his own personal life support unit, and swore he'd always be careful. Chu Wanning just nodded, and then went back to reading under the Haitang tree at the center of the garden levels. Moran had wanted, so badly, to be Chu Wanning, to be like him, or just with him, forever. He didn't know. He barely had the words to be grateful when Uncle got him off that transit flyer and somewhere with enough oxygen. How could he find them now? He just wanted. Yeah, and see where that got me, he says, because down here, there's no one to eavesdrop except the plants, who probably don't care about his muttering, and the local AIs, who probably care even less. One of the larger AI shells is just visible at the end of the hallway, floating over the rows of soybeans like a huge plastic bag. The shell billows and contorts as the AI moves, in ways that make Moran's eyes hurt on a good day, so he focuses on his feet as he keeps trudging through the bamboo, stifling a yawn every few steps. At least there's no class today. Moran's pretty sure he'd already be in the medbay if it was, as much for showing up hungover to class as for showing off in front of Rufeng to begin with. Both fall under the vast umbrella of things Chu Wanning does not like, which seems to overlap perfectly with everything Moran does, says, or thinks. They're a long way from that morning under the Haitang tree, when Moran saw Chu Wanning and felt, ever so briefly, like he'd come home. The barrel catches on a dip in the tile, like they all do. Moran sighs and gives it a tug. It doesn't move. Whatever, he says, locking his left elbow and sending a quick command through his implants to add a little more force to the synthetic muscles. He feels the answering zing up his arm, all the way past his shoulder and into his jaw, and then yanks the barrel out of the dip. It worked out in the end, right? So what if Chu Wanning didn't work out the way I wanted? It's not on me. He's not... A little sore spot in his chest starts to ache. It's always there, the never-healing bruise. But today, spurred by lack of sleep, bad judgment, and three pitchers of, it has to be said, amazingly shitty beer, Moran can't hold back. He's just cold, and he doesn't care, even when I... with my arm. He pauses to wipe his sweaty face on his free arm and keeps hauling. Ah, whatever, it's not worth it. Chu-Wan-Ning won't care. Why should I? At least Shimei was here to help me with the damn prosthetic. And getting it working is how the sentence should have ended, if he hadn't seen a flicker of something pale and fast-moving at the corner of his eye. The bamboo nearly hides it, but Moran hasn't forgotten the promise he made under the Haitang tree, even if it turned out not to matter at all to the person he made it to. He does not, think about his mother as he lets the barrel fall and dives into the bamboo, clawing his way through thin, damp soil in pursuit of whatever that was. Too late, he realizes what a horrible idea it is to touch anything coming out of the rift with his bare skin, but his flesh hand closes around his prey at that moment. Triumphant, and also not dead, he crawls back out of the bamboo and into the light to see what he's caught. "What the fuck?" he says. The tiniest AI he's ever seen glares up at him through his fingers. If something without eyes or a face can glare.
"Are you always so vulgar?"
it snaps in a reedy little kid's voice.
"Do you always waste time complaining about nonsense when you should be working?"
"Hey now, let's talk about how I just found you sneaking around in the bamboo, buddy," Moran says, without opening his hand. The AI isn't struggling, but it keeps flashing indignant red and pink. If it wasn't such a smartass, Moran would be totally endeared.
"I wasn't sneaking."
"Oh, yeah. Then what would you call that? Spying on the dumb human?" Moran grins as the red and pink flashes get faster.
What's there to spy on? Nothing."
All right, you weren't spying," Moran agrees, opening his fingers to get a better look. Most of the AIs he's met, and he knows he hasn't met half the ones on station, not even half the ones that like to manifest physical shells, are room-sized projections of hard light, or constantly shifting clouds of non-sapient microscopic robots. At least he thinks he means non-sapient. He always gets that word mixed up with non-sentient. "Then what were you doing?"
"I was observing. For security purposes only."
The AI gives him a lofty, cool look from its non-face. Such dignity from something barely the size of Moran's fist.
"You just happened to be here."
"Of course. Totally." Fuck it. Moran is totally endeared.
"The garden levels would be among the first targeted by an invader, whether human or originating from the rift."
"Yep."
"Don't,"
hisses the AI, its voice pitching upwards until it cracks.
"Patronize me."
It flares hot, star white. Heat surges up Moran's arm. He swears, drops the AI, and stumbles back to trip over the barrel. He sprawls flat on his ass, still swearing, and checks his hand for burns. "I wasn't patronizing you," Moran protests from the floor. "You didn't have to..." He stops talking as the AI drifts into view, hovering a meter over his head. It's still tiny, and made of too many shifting layers to see what its actual shape is, but something about the warm golden light it sheds like pollen charms him even more than its attitude. No, he's not charmed. He's comforted, even if it did just try to set fire to his arm.
"What?"
it demands, moving towards the ceiling. Its many layers spin faster, strobing pure white alarm.
"If you're just going to mock me, Moran, I'll go."
No, wait, come on. He scrambles up, his hangover now a primal scream of a headache, and nearly trips over the barrel. "I'm sorry, Xiao Din Nao. I'm sorry, okay? Don't go. Also, wait a second. How do you know who I was?" The AI's spinning stutters.
"I queried the main sys feed of the station," it says, still so dignified.
Moran fights a smile.
"I wanted to know who was assigned to this part of the garden levels. It wasn't hard to find."
Right. Moran isn't going to say he wasn't sure if the little AI had a link to the sys feed yet. It looks way too young, which he knows isn't a term that applies to AIs in general, but this one is so cute. Adorable, really. "Fair enough," he grins, as he grabs the handle of the barrel. That's not really fair, though, is it?"
"What's not fair?"
says the AI warily. "You know me, but who doesn't? But I don't know you. What do I call you? Unless you like Xiao Dian Nao. I could keep calling you that." More spinning. The layers shade back to warm, flickering gold.
"You can call me Xia Si Ni,"
it says after a few seconds. "Oh my god," Moran thinks, unable to stop himself from smiling. "I love this little guy. I would die for Xia Si Ni." "Okay," he says. "Xia Si Ni it is. Wanna keep me company while I finish up? It'd be nice to have someone to talk to. Don't worry, I'm not gonna ask you to help. No offense, but this looks like a bit too much for you. Unless you need to help your programmer."
"He is busy,"
Xia Si Ni says. "Oh, yeah? Making more little..." Moran stops that sentence before it can get him another neural shock and clears his throat. Who's your programmer? I know most of them because I'm one of Chu Lao Shu's students."
"My programmer."
Xia Si Ni's shell tightens. If he were a human, he would be hunching his shoulders.
"Is Chu Lao Shu?"
Moran works his jaw. "Huh," he says carefully. It figures, the first time he gets to meet a new AI in years, it's one of two Wannings. Xia Si Ni probably already hates him. AIs had their own personalities and preferences, but they tend to mirror their original programmer in a lot of ways, and stay extremely loyal to said programmer, especially when it comes to people their programmer doesn't like. "That's cool for you," he adds, after Xia Si Ni stared at him for a while. "Well, if you're not busy with stuff for Chu Lao Shu, then hang out with me. It'll be fun, I promise. A whole barrel of fun, yeah?" He waves at his cargo, winking just to make the joke even cornier. It feels like Xia Si Ni gives him another glare, but the AI just floats slightly ahead of Moran, like it's looking out towards the gardens. He tries to follow what it's watching for, but it's just soybeans as far as the eye can see. No other workers, nothing. The AI he saw earlier is long gone. Xia Si Ni floats back to hover at his shoulder.
"Okay,"
it says. Moran gives it another grin. Halfway through plugging in the barrel, Moran realizes he hasn't felt the ghost touch of the rift the whole time he's been talking to Xia Si Ni. He knows it's still there, shining and hungry, but he doesn't notice it. There are 11 distinct feeds being streamed to Chu Wanning's main monitor. He is only paying attention to one, a still image of Moran's smiling face. Eyes bright with exertion, expression open in a way it never is when he looks at Chu Wanning. He's been staring at it long enough for 5 of the ignored feeds to start pinging him for commands, or, in the case of the topmost right feed, for some signal that he's still alive and hasn't succumbed to any of the rift's myriad effects. So, Chu Wanning presses the pad of his thumb against the waiting sensor until he feels the needle pierce his skin, exactly where it always does, bruises upon bruises, and take the singular drop of blood it needs to determine his disposition, according to the stupidly alliterative protocol. His shuttle is far enough from the station to add a 10-second delay to any communications, which means he has a full 20 seconds to wait for his results. He knows he's uncompromised. One doesn't spend as much time as he does staring at the rift without knowing an incursion's symptoms. But there are protocols that can be ignored, and ones that can't. Chu Wanning spends those 20 seconds with his head in his hands, hearing Moran's voice over and over, damning him. He's just cold, and he doesn't care. Moran is half right, Chu Wanning supposes. The truth of his coldness is all the evidence anyone needs to believe the lie that he doesn't care. But he does care. Or he wants to, keeps making awkward, hesitant attempts to prove it, only for his own bad temper and poisonous tongue to undermine him. Every time, without fail. He looks up when 22 seconds have passed and no results have yet arrived. A ship may have temporarily blocked the signal, but he memorized all the flight routes and few ships would deviate from their registered paths. They all know the risks of the rift and Chu Wanning's temper. There is still time before he has to worry. He puts his head back in his hands, but not before looking one last time at the image of Moran. Handsome, bright, smiling Moran. One dimple visible and his eyes flashing violet in the warm garden-level lights. So young, so beautiful, so good. Even on a screen, he looks twice as alive as Chu Wanning does in person. He's only wearing the thin sleeveless tunic the students favor, and the harsh line where the prosthetic arm meets his shoulder is clearly visible. Chu Wanning feels his heart clench. Though there's no sign of rejection or redness in the image. He worked hard to ensure that would be the case, while Moran healed in a cryo tank in the med bay. The incursion had been devastating, but when weren't they? The station was lucky so few were compromised. The shriveled corpses of ships that were not so fortunate still drift through the system, waiting to be caught in the sun's gravity well. But that incursion had been devastating because Moran had been at risk. Because Moran had nearly been taken. Never mind that Moran was only hurt because he disobeyed Chu Wanning's orders to retreat and charged into the mass ripping of iron-teethed forms clawing their way through the hull. The joy Chu Wanning felt when Moran was found alive in the wreckage was all-consuming. Almost pathetic in its depth. The fury that came after was shameful. He shouted at Moran, insulted him, promised to break both his legs for disobeying, and in return, something in Moran was closed to him forever. Nothing less than what he deserved. When the prosthetic was ready, he installed it and told Shimei to take the credit. It wouldn't have been accepted otherwise. And if he wished the smile Moran gave Shimei had been for him, that was his secret. Chu Wanning has so many of those. The Xiaxini AI shell is one of them. A way to split his consciousness via quantum entanglement and avoid the time delay completely while he works out at the rift's border. He thought it would be easier to hide, but Moran surprised him, as so often happens. While he should have revealed the truth as soon as Moran spoke to him, Moran had been so happy to talk to Xiaxini that Chu Wanning couldn't resist lingering. Just this once, he tells himself. It can't happen again. He can't be weak. A subvocal command unfreezes the Xiaxini feed. Moran is still at work in the garden level, humming to himself as he passes through the flowering trees at the far end. Chu Wanning starts to close the feed, But then Moran brushes his hand against the Haitang tree Zuanning himself favors. The moment is so quick and casual, Zuanning could deny he saw anything. But he saw it. Moran lingering a moment under the tree, where they first met, touching it with the arm Zuanning built for him in 3 silent, terrified days. "It doesn't mean anything," he says through numb lips. His traitor heart whispers, "But what if?" Before he can answer, the sensor pings. "All clear." Zuanning shakes himself. Enough of this pointless longing. Moran would sooner love what the rift vomits out than him. He shuts off all but the most critical feeds and programs the shuttle to jump to the next barrier engine. The reflection in the nearly blank monitor is a gaunt, steel-eyed man, too thin and angular to even be called striking. Zuanning stares at himself as the engine spins up, gnawing at the inside of his cheek until it bleeds. He tells himself he won't activate the Xiaxinyi feed again. 6 hours later, he does, but Moran is long gone, and the garden levels are empty. "You don't think something's wrong, do you?" Moran ignores Shui Meng and shoves the barrel into place, almost groaning with relief when he hears the click of the hookups. "You dumbass, talk to me. Why would Lao Shi stay away so long?" "Why would I fucking care?" is what Moran wants to say, because he's on hour 4 of a 3-hour shift, all thanks to Shui Meng's constant badgering. What he forces himself to say instead is, "I don't know, Meng Meng. He doesn't clear his plans with me before he goes somewhere. Maybe message him yourself to find out." "I..." Shui Meng's face twists in shock. If Moran weren't so tired, he'd start laughing. "Like I'd bother Lao Shi when he's working. And you better not be either. He's got better things to do than listen to your garbage." That's a sharp conversational turn, even by Shui Meng's standards. Moran shrugs. "Okay then, maybe it's all those better things that have him delayed. Ask Uncle, he probably knows." "I already did." Shui Meng drapes himself across the stair railing, brow furrowed so hard Moran can almost hear the skin crinkling. "Chu Lao Shi just said he was delayed, nothing else." Even for Zuanning, that's light on details, especially since Shui Zhengyong is one of the few people on the station he actually makes an effort for. Moran feels a reluctant concern take root in his gut. Reluctant and unwelcome, because Zuanning's more than capable of handling himself, and because Zuanning wouldn't exactly welcome that concern, either. He surprises himself by asking with real investment in the answer, "He's still checking in, right?" Shui Meng nods, frown still in place. "All clear, but it's been 3 extra days out on the rift that's..." "Look," Moran interrupts, "Lao Shi's fine. What's the rift gonna throw at him that he can't handle?" The seam at his shoulder throbs, an old remembered pain. For a brief moment, Moran is back under the wreckage, gasping as he hears his air leak away, wondering when he stopped feeling his left arm. "He's fine," he adds with emphasis, although whether that's for Shui Meng or for himself, he is not sure. And not interested in analyzing. Predictably, Shui Meng explodes. "That's our Lao Shi you're talking about, idiot! How can you not care? What if something's happened to him? He wouldn't tell us. He wouldn't want us to worry. Haven't you gotten that through your thick head?" "Okay, then why are we worrying if that's not what he wants?" It's like there's a blister inside his chest, waiting to burst. Moran can't put a name to half of what he feels about Tuaning on a good day, but now it's just a boiling hot mix of emotion, eating away at him like acid. What he does know he feels is that the thought of something happening to Tuaning terrifies him, but not why. You... Shuimeng's tirade is interrupted by a tiny pop, accompanied by a flash of light. A familiar gold shape flowers into existence just overhead, the meshed vines circling around and through a central blossom. Delight replaces the rancid emotional froth in Moran's head. Xiaoxini, he yells, you're back.
Hello,
says the AI, placidly and quietly. So quietly, Shuimeng's noise of surprise almost swallows up their voice. Wait, when did you meet Xiaoxini? You haven't been bothering him, have you? No, Moran says without thinking. He glances over at Xiaoxini a little guiltily. He didn't give the little guy a chance to answer, but Xiaoxini doesn't seem to disagree. And we met yesterday when I was on my shift. We had fun hanging out, right, Xiaoxini? Xiaoxini drifts over to the cauldron, shedding pollen as he goes.
You didn't turn this on, Moran.
Thanks for that. Moran finishes programming the sequence and steps back, beaming at what he hopes is Xiaoxini's face. What about you, Shuimeng? When do you guys meet? 2 weeks ago, Shuimeng replies, puffing up with satisfaction that he made friends with the AI first, because everything's a competition. Moran doesn't bother to hide his eye roll. Right after Chulashu left. How are you, Xiaoxini? This idiot hasn't been bothering you, has he? Right, because Moran's a threat to an AI that can make you think your nerves are melting and on fire. Cue eye roll 2 of the day.
No,
Xiaoxini says. He is strangely emphatic about it.
Moran doesn't bother me. He's nice.
Moran beams. See? I'm nice, Shuimeng. Whatever, that doesn't mean he likes you. You don't have to put up with him, Xiaoxini. He doesn't get better, I promise.
I like Moran.
Xiaoxini's shell shrinks in on itself, the gold light mottling with what looks like bruises briefly, before clearing and expanding.
And I like it here.
I win, Moran mouths at Shuimeng. Who mouths something truly obscene and insulting back? Well, if you want to deal with him, I can't stop you, Xiaoxini. Shuimeng says, with a half-smile that takes most of the sting out of his words. But if you want some real company, I've got my shift up on the transit level. I promise I won't be anything like this idiot. Yeah, get going, Meng Meng. Go wave some fancy lights around to entertain the shuttle pilots. You know that's not what I do, shut up. Moran's laughter chases Shuimeng out of the garden levels, leaving him alone with Xiaoxini. Just you and me now, little guy, he says with a wink. He expects a don't call me that, or maybe even another shock, but Xiaoxini just says, and floats alongside him as he heads out for another barrel. It's easy to be Xiaoxini in a way being himself isn't. Chuaning can manifest Xiaoxini's shell anytime he wants in proximity to his students, and they'll all greet him with smiles and real warmth. From the beginning, it's clear they want him around in a way they never wanted Chuaning. So he stays out at the barrier, circling through the engines like he has actual repairs to make, giving excuse after excuse to Sui Zhengyong whenever the station leader presses him about his return. Just for the chance to be Siasuni a little longer. He doesn't eat much, so the rations on board his shuttle will last for at least another month, too, if he's very strict about his consumption. Even a week as Siasuni seems like an unspeakable luxury. Not just from the ease of acceptance, the knowledge of being wanted, but from being able to say exactly what he thinks and not be laughed at or feared. Well, sometimes Moran laughs at him, but in a way that lets Siasuni be in on the joke. Zhu Wanning would tolerate being the joke just for the chance to have Moran smile at him, warm and open, and say, "What do you think, Siasuni?" Like his answer actually mattered to Moran. Like it had weight and worth. He presses his thumb to the sensor, a small sting, then the wait for results. Over and over, every hour, for days on end. Both his thumbs are pocked with sore red marks, along with the rest of his fingers. It hurts to work the controls, even though they all operate on haptic feedback and require no actual contact. But he keeps doing it, stretching out the hours he can be someone other people are glad to know. Buying that luxury, 1 hour, one drop of blood at a time. All clear. Because Zhu Wanning is, at his heart, a weak, lewd old man, he activates the Siasuni feed, even though he knows it's the night cycle, back on Shisheng Peak. He's even tempted to manifest the shell outside Moran's door, but he steals himself and manifests it instead on the garden level, where Moran works every morning. If he were two levels up in this section, he could hear water being cycled through the pools in the fish hatchery. But here it's almost silent, save for fresh air coming through the hidden vents in the ceiling. A few leaves rustle, but nothing truly stirs or moves. He can float through the more orderly rows, scan the bulkheads for signs of structural weakness, check the storerooms to make sure the barrels of soil additives are ready for Moran's arrival. He could do little to help in this form if they weren't, but he wants so badly to be of use he can't stop himself. Anything, anything at all, to pay back what he's so selfishly taken. Siasuni. He twists the shell around so abruptly his actual human body grows nauseous, thinking, this is how I'm found out. Because what real AI can be taken off guard like this? But Moran, rubbing sleepily at one eye, just smiles at him from under mussed hair. And here I was thinking I'd get a head start on the day and impress everyone. He ambles forward, yawning, palms the lock on the storeroom door. But you're here ahead of me. Should have figured I couldn't beat an AI, right? Zhu Wanning drifts into the room, in Moran's wake, puzzled. Moran loves his sleep. More than his coursework or training, it has to be said. So why is he here, in the valley of the night cycle? He's saved from having to ask. Moran is already talking, his voice rough from sleep. It makes goose flesh prickle over Zhu Wanning's body and floods him with warmth. Never, not once, has he heard Moran like this. He never wants to stop. I couldn't sleep. Moran works his way down the line of barrels, checking the readout on each one between yawns. Oh, well, no, it's more like I could, but I didn't want to. It gets like that sometimes. I'm tired, but I know it'll be a bad night, so I don't.
A bad night?
Zhu Wanning prompts. He regrets working so long and so hard on ensuring the entanglement courier system would have such an excellent visual projection. Moran looks real enough to touch, smell, taste. Shame burns through him at the thought. His student, his own student, a young man who doesn't deserve to be the object of Zhu Wanning's desire, let alone this spying. But he can't stop himself. He'll find a way to pay it all back, somehow, someday. Moran sighs. Yeah, it's... Okay, you know my arm. Yes, Chuanning does know Moran's arm. Like his own, one might say. He grips his wrist and presses his thumb into the pulse right below his palm. Rabbit, hummingbird, quick. It looks great now, but I lost the real one a few years ago. An incursion. You know what those are, right? Never mind, I'm stupid. Anyway, there was an incursion, and I was trying to get people out of a compromised sector when one of those, you know, those things came in through the hull and collapsed it on top of me. They got me out, but it was 2 days later. I'm fine now, Moran says brightly. Better than fine, I mean. Have you seen this arm? No way I could lift these barrels without it. My friend Chimay, he designed it. Got me all set up and onto a whole integration therapy program. But I still have nightmares. He adds, like he's rushing past the worst part of the story for Siasani's sake. So sometimes it's better not to sleep. When that happens, I just come down here and get to work. I'm tired all day, and let me tell you, Chu Laoshi, he gets real mad when that happens, but sometimes it's better not to sleep, that's all. So here I am. What can Chuanning possibly say to that without giving himself away? He already gave up any claim to the arm or its benefits. Now he wonders if there is any comfort he can give without Moran immediately detecting the lie.
Here you are.
It sounds inane to his own ears. But Moran smiles and retrieves the first barrel, not minding in the least, and not judging Siasani at all. Yep, he says. Here and ready to work. So it's not that bad, right?
Right.
Chuanning echoes, still inane. Can I tell you something, though? Through Siasani's visual feed, Moran looks more than tired. He looks pale and wrung out and strangely old. Chuanning realizes this is what Moran will look like 40, 50 years down the line, and slams his heart closed against the idea. He has no right to such a glimpse. Less than he does to Moran's confidence, or even Moran's company. Moran isn't his. These stolen moments are already more than he hoped for. He should say no, or change the subject, contrive some interruption and escape without hearing this secret. Moran is talking to a lie. It isn't right. But he says, and darts closer into Moran's reach. Thanks, Moran says, almost sheepish. It's just, I know Chimay worked so hard on it. A wave at the arm. Chuanning's stomach won't stop hurting. But sometimes, when he works on it, it hurts more than before he did. I'm not complaining. It's probably something I'm doing wrong. But it hurts a lot. I don't want to tell him and make him upset. Even if Chuanning knew what to say, he wouldn't be able to speak. He just watches Moran rub at the back of his neck, then the scar tissue where Chuanning carefully stitched the prosthetic into his body. Moran looks up with a grin, then huffs a laugh. Thanks, Siasani. It's good to talk to you, you know, my little buddy.
I'm not little,
Chuanning says on reflex, then flushes in mortification and anxiety. Surely that sharp reply gave him away. He sounded too much like himself, not pleasant, quiet Siasani. But Moran just keeps smiling, eyes curved and white teeth gleaming. All right, if you say so. If you say so, Siasani. Ah, time to get moving. Maybe I'll finish early today. What do you say? Chuanning shuts his eyes, and Siasani's. He hears Moran's footsteps moving away. and Moran's pleasant, tuneless humming, but doesn't follow. That day is too clear in his mind. The memory is inescapable. He has relived them too many times to count. The digging through tainted rubble, swallowing mouthfuls of blood as the incursion remnants tried to infect him. He'd been so afraid all he would find under the broken hull would be what remained of Moran's corpse. So afraid he felt nothing else until he pulled off his armor and skin suit and saw the bloody rents in his own skin. But he killed every last remnant. He found Moran. The rest? The rest is worth it. Siasini. Moran stands at the end of the hall, head cocked to the side. You coming? Lots of plants to feed. Chuanning shuts off the feed, bile in his throat and no air in his lungs. He jams his thumb onto the sensor, again and again and again, until his mind is a wash of gray static and he only feels that tiny, bright soreness. Never again, he decides. He can never pay this back, no matter how hard he tries. He lasts almost 20 hours this time. Moran is just as happy to see Siasani as he always is, but the hurt in his eyes is obvious. He doesn't ask, and Chuanning doesn't reply. They move through the gardens in silence, helping the plants grow. Shui Meng paces the classroom, which isn't big enough for more than 5 strides in any direction, so he can't really work up the furious energy he wants to. But he's funny to watch, and Moran needs a good laugh today. His arm hurts, like it's about to pull away from his shoulder, and in spite of Shimei's gentle reminders to leave it be, he keeps rubbing at the seam, trying to soothe away the ache. Can't you just take a look at it? He whines, while Shui Meng keeps circling like the universe's most obnoxious security drone in the background. Just take a quick look, Shimei. It hurts so bad. Aran, Shimei says, with the sort of helpless laugh that punctuates every other sentence he speaks. It's not really that bad, is it? Maybe you could get some painkillers from Madame Wang and see if that helps. I don't know how much I could do for it if it's just hurting. I already did. Ask Auntie Wang, that is. She said I should ask you. Moran drapes himself over his desk and gives Shimei his best imploring look. Shui Meng's pacing has reached a measurable percentage of C, and he's now muttering, too. Oblivious to Moran's suffering, because he's a terrible cousin, the absolute worst. Please, Shimei, I'll make you dinner. Well, says Shimei, which is as good as a victory in Moran's opinion. But Shui Meng explodes before Moran can press his advantage. It's been 46 days, he yells, whirling to face them with fists raised. Moran covers his face with his non-agonized hand and pretends to go to sleep. They can count. It's not like they don't know. 46 days and no one's worried. When's Lao Shu coming back? When's someone going to ask if he's okay? Shui Ziming. Shimei pats the air, smiling reassuringly. He's checked in every hour. His signs are clear. Chu Lao Shu is fine. He's just busy at the barrier. Exactly! Shui Meng stabs a finger towards the ceiling. Nobody is supposed to be at the barrier for more than 20 consecutive days. Lao Shu himself set that limit. So, doesn't that mean he's the one who can break it? Moran peers at Shui Meng through his fingers. Fuck, his arm hurts. His vision wobbles so badly he can't focus on Shui Meng's face. Maybe that's a surprise benefit, actually, aside from the pain. Lao Shu knows best, better than anyone, Right, Shimei. The expected agreement doesn't come. Shimei bites his thumbnail. 3 years ago, Moran would have dreamed of rescuing that thumb for a week straight. But he knows better now, and sighs. Maybe Shui Ziming's right, Aran. Maybe we should be worried, instead of telling us he's fine when he might not be. Shui Meng snarls, telltale red in his eyes. Hey! Moran stands up, wavering a little when his vision doubles. He rubs at the seam without thinking, barely hearing Shimei's protests. Stop acting like I want Lao She to be in trouble. All I'm saying is that he knows best, okay? If he's still saying he's fine, and the records match, let him be. You like it when he's not around because you get to slack off. Shui Meng snapped, turning to the view screen at the head of the room. A distant ship darts across the void. Bright white against a black so deep, Moran used to think he could reach out and scoop up handfuls of it. At the far left of the screen, he can just see the rotted light of the rift's corona. His stomach churns, not just from pain this time, and he looks away, to the back of Shui Meng's hand. Maybe it's because I like not being told I'm a failure all the time, he says before he can think twice. It's nice to get a break. He told you that once, Shui Meng screams, whirling around with actual hate in his eyes. Once! And only after you didn't listen to him and nearly died. He was angry, but that's it. He didn't mean it. It sure sounded like he did, Moran snaps, pushing forward into Shui Meng's space. This is a mistake. He's only this mad because his arm won't stop hurting, and because, deep down, he's beginning to be afraid, too. He doesn't know how he feels about Su Wanning, but that doesn't mean he wants anything bad to happen. Su Wanning deserves to be fine and healthy and safe and far away from Moran. It's for the best, for both of them. He's awkward, says Shui Meng, standing his ground but not meeting Moran's eyes. He doesn't care. Moran doesn't speak so much as hiss the words into Shui Meng's face. Maybe he doesn't about you, but me? Deficient. That's what he said after I nearly died trying to do the right thing. You must be beyond saving, Moran, Xu Anning had said, eyes so cold they made absolute zero look like planet-side summer. What made you so deficient? So beyond fixing. Some wounds never heal. He got a new arm, but the hole in his chest stayed open, not even scar tissue to mask it, a slow bleed right at the center of his soul. He can come back or not. Moran turns toward the door. I don't care either. His vision clears as he goes, leaving him perfectly able to see Xia Sunyi's golden shape dim to gray ash and vanish without a sound. Chu Anning peels himself out of the pilot's seat and walks stiffly back to the narrow cot at the back of the shuttle. He sits down on the edge of it and waits to feel something beyond the great numbness spreading through his body. And waits. And waits. None of this is new information, and most of it is true. He is awkward and cold. He did say those things to Moran, as his student lay in the medbay and tried to explain why he risked himself so. Of course he hadn't meant them. Of course he'd spoken from fear, but that hardly matters now. It hadn't mattered then. They were spoken, that's all. His hands are shaking. A single tear falls on a knuckle and rolls away. He lies down. The shuttle lights dim in response to what its simple VI thinks is him entering the night cycle, but he doesn't sleep. Whenever the sensor pings for the check-in, he stands, stings his thumb, and lies down again, stares into the dark, feels nothing but cold, thinks of nothing but silence. 47 hours later, he arrives at Sichuan Peak. His shuttle is quarantined, scanned, and cleared for entry 36 hours after that. 20 minutes after that, he's in Shui Zhengyong's private meeting room, staring at a cup of tea he won't drink. "Yu Heng," says the station leader, "you gave us quite a scare. Being so long, and then coming back when you did." Meng is beside himself. "Don't be too shocked if he doesn't leave you alone for the next little while, huh? Poor boy's been worried sick." "I told you I was fine and reported in," Su Anning says. "There was no cause for worry. Shui Zeming's time would have been better spent on his studies." Don't fault him for caring about his Laoshi. He's a good boy. And Ranner, too. And Shimei. They've all been worried." "He doesn't care." Su Anning decides to take a sip of his tea rather than respond. The heat of the cup soothes his sore fingers, though he barely notices. He is preoccupied by the Xiaoxinyi feed. Moran is approaching the shell, hands clenching and unclenching at his sides, his handsome face somewhere between determined and remorseful. He could shut off the feed, vanish before Moran arrives to say whatever he's going to say. Manifesting the shell had been a mistake, an indulgence Su Anning could not afford. But the hurt within him rose too high and crested the walls he erected to contain it. That much pain had to go somewhere, and so he gave it all to Xiaoxinyi, who, unlike Su Anning, was allowed to cry. "Xiaoxinyi," says Moran, tentative. Su Anning's heart seems to stop, then picks up again twice as fast.
"Go away,"
he says through Xiaoxinyi. He could leave, of course, but Xiaoxinyi can stay, just like he can cry. He can be weak and listen to Moran a little longer. "It's good to have you back, Yu Heng," says Shui Zhengyong. "No matter what you say, and I know your students are happy about it, too. You have to explain to them why you were gone so long, though. Worried him sick, you know." Worried for his safety? Hardly. Everyone knows that the Yu Heng elder is more at home at the barrier than he is on station, after all. "I will if you want me to." Moran's throat works as he inches closer to Xiaoxinyi. "But first..." Su Anning's hands are trying to shake. He sets his cup down and stares at Shui Zhengyong's viewscreen, which currently displays the various ships on approach to the station. "Any troubles out at the barrier?" When Su Anning glances his way, Shui Zhengyong shrugs and fans himself a little harder. "You were out there for weeks, Yu Heng. Weeks. I'm allowed to be a little concerned. Speaking of which, you're looking awful pale. You talk to the cooks, all right. Get them to make you something decent." Su Anning will do no such thing, and they both know it. The knowledge has never stopped Shui Zhengyong from trying. "There is nothing of concern," Su Anning says. An enormous cargo ship lumbers across the viewscreen, inching through its approach to the station. His ocular implants zoom in automatically on the ship's hull, revealing the words, "Butterfly Town," written in rose-red letters across its hull. "I shouldn't have said those things about Su Anning where you could hear them," says Moran. He shivers a little. Su Anning scans the ambient temperature on the garden level, finds it at the bottom of the acceptable range. Frowning, he tries to use Xiaoxinyi to access the local climate controls, but Shui Zhengyong clears his throat, prompting Su Anning for more information. "The rift itself is active," he says. Moran's wide, dark eyes fill his head, but they aren't looking at him, are they? just his friend, little Xiaseni, who had the bad luck to be created by cold, hollow Chuanning. His throat tries to close, but he forces himself to keep speaking. However, the barrier engines show no sign of wear. I'll return in 8 weeks to review and repair as scheduled. Where I belong, he thinks. I don't know how I feel, says Mordan. He looks almost like a boy again, hurt and scared and hopeful all at once. Beautiful, then, now, and always. Chuanning's longing could burn up an entire galaxy. You just got back, Shui Zhengyong sighs. Yuhong, you need a family to come back to. I was just saying to my wife, Yuhong needs... If there's nothing else, station leader, Chuanning interrupts, then please excuse me. You have my full report. I never read those things. Shui Zhengyong waves him towards the door with his fan. Your word's good enough for me. Now you'd better get some rest if you won't get a wife. Chuanning won't be doing that either. He stands and bows politely and firmly to Shui Zhengyong. The butterfly town is close enough now to see how the rose paint has peeled away in strips, along with a few stains from minor debris collisions. Odd that they haven't been repaired. He pauses as a stray thought crosses his mind. Station leader, he says, when is the butterfly town due to arrive? It's not. Shui Zhengyong hides a yawn behind his fan. Decommissioned 2 years ago, after it came too close to the rift unshielded. Scrapped it. Sent the remains sunward, it's... He blinks and glances at Chuanning. Station, he shouts, the rest of his command sub-vocalized. The garden levels, he says to Chuanning, who's already running, already out the door. Later, Chuanning will be grateful Shui Zhengyong trusted him so completely. Will give thanks that the station leader didn't ask questions before raising the alarm. But that's hours from the panicked moment between realization and action. Here, in the present, Chuanning only resents those extra seconds spent doing anything other than fighting off the incursion. Those extra seconds spent not finding Moran and saving him. The jokes about soulless, unfeeling AIs are in pretty bad taste. Moran's always thought so. They've got the full range of emotions that come with sapience. And yeah, he knows that's what that means now. He looked it up. AIs just process those emotions differently, faster, in dimensions made of pure computational matter, anger and happiness, all made of math. There's nothing that says AIs can't cry. It's still a shock when Moran comes around the end of a row and finds Xiaseni crying under the Haitang tree. His first instinct is to walk away, pretend he didn't see or hear anything. It's not an instinct he's proud of, but Moran doesn't have a lot of those. Whenever he tries to do the right or kind thing, it turns to shit in his hands. Knowing that they'd only make whatever was happening worse, who wouldn't walk away? Moran doesn't. He ignores the shitty first instinct for an even shittier impulse, to try and apologize, like that's ever gone well for him either. Xiaseni, he asks, barely a whisper. The tiny sniffles choke off, and the miserable grayscale shell of Xiaseni rises a few feet off the ground. The spinning layers move in slow, hurt circles, and dark violet stains are scattered across the surface, like bruises. Moran's heart feels like it's been kicked.
Go away, Moran, says Xiaseni.
A few angry pulses of red dart across his shell.
Leave.
I will if you want me to. Moran realizes he's cut off his own plan, then adds, but first, can I apologize?
No.
Xiaseni starts to float away, still slow, still bruised.
I don't want to talk to you.
I was a jerk. I get it. I shouldn't have said those things about Chuanning where you could hear them. Really, I'm sorry, I just...
Just what?
The entire shell flares red. Incursion alarm red. I've been crying for hours, red.
You talk so much, Moran. You don't listen. You never asked. You didn't want to know why I...
The tiniest hitch in Chiasani's voice, like a hairline fracture in a nice piece of glass.
So what if you're sorry?
Chiasani asks. The layers of vines close in on the central flower, a five-petaled haitong blossom. Moran realizes weeks too late, because of course it is. He just didn't care enough to see it.
You still said it. And that's all you're sorry for. You're not sorry for feeling it, are you?
No, Moran nearly says. Because he's not, is he? What had he said that isn't true? What part of Chuanning isn't cold, isn't awkward, judgmental, cruel? Does that mean it needed to be said? The seam at his shoulder starts to ache, a chilly, bone-deep hurt. At least it's a change from the tingling burn from the last few weeks. Easier to ignore, too. I don't know, he says, rubbing his thumb along the seam. The ceramic is cool to the touch, his skin somehow cooler. I don't hate him, you know. Chuanning, I don't. It's just that I...
It hurts,
says Chiasani, as if Moran hadn't spoken.
Knowing you feel that way. Everyone does, don't they? Everyone feels the way you do.
How could they? I don't even know how I feel. Moran runs his hands through his hair, startled at how cold he is all over. A current of air stirs through the plants and breaks blossoms off the haitong's branches. Sometimes I think he hated me right from the beginning, like I was never going to be good enough.
You never asked him,
Chiasani whispers. He's floating away again, with his edges blurring like he's about to fold this shell away and vanish. Moran follows him for a few steps, itching to reach out, knowing he shouldn't.
No one did.
Who cares? Who gives a fuck? Chuanning doesn't. Why should I? He thinks I'm trash. Always has. Always will. I nearly died and he just wanted to tell me what I did wrong. What am I supposed to do with that, huh? Tell me. He lets the word sweep through him but doesn't let himself speak. The inside of his head feels scalded from the heat of his anger, but he doesn't speak. Yes, he's angry and hurt, and yes, he has every reason to be. But what Chiasani is saying is true. He never asked Chuanning anything at all. Moran tries hard as he can not to think about waking up in the med bay, with Chuanning standing over him, pale and shadow-eyed. He doesn't want to remember the shouting that followed, the teeth-bared anger that seemed large enough to swallow the station whole. Now he does. Now he remembers Chuanning, how his hands shook on his knees, how red and tired his eyes had been, the bandages peeking out of his robes, his lank, unwashed hair. Moran forgot all of that and the anger that came after. He was there the whole time, wasn't he? Moran says to himself. At the corner of his eye, almost hidden by the plume of his breath, Chiasani flashes, brief, all over gold. Chuanning. He was there, and I never...
Moran.
Nervous flashes of green and blue light up Chiasani's gray shell.
The cold.
Too late. Moran recognizes the oncoming incursion seconds before it arrives. He has time for a subvocal warning to the station sys feed before the glass overhead rips open with a sound like a giant belching and the air screams into vacuum. A woman's gaunt face, smeared with white handprints, and with a second mouth circling her head like a crown, peers inside.
"Surprise!"
she shrieks, her voice is mingling with his mother's and Chimay's.
"Surprise! Surprise!
Surprise! I'm here, they're here, they're all here for you."
Moran guesses he has 40 seconds before he runs out of air. He pulls his sword hilt from his belt and activates the blade as he starts to run. The woman keeps screaming and laughing as he comes.
"Chasani,"
he yells over the rush of escaping air.
"Go! Make sure they know."
The woman pours inside, a snake-like body made of fat, boneless coils. She reaches for him with both arms. Moran grins and raises his sword. 35 seconds. 34. And then the lights go out, and there are claws at his throat, in his throat. Siasini screams his name.
"Hello,"
says the woman, her mouth at his.
"Hello, Ryanair, hello."
What is the rift? Funny you should ask, because for every time that question's been asked, a different answer is offered. "It's hell," says one person, only for the next to say it's pure chaos. A realm where the fundamental laws of our physics don't apply. A collective hallucination. A wound carved right into the heart of the universe and left bleeding. That's probably closest. But then wounds should heal, shouldn't they? Scab over, coagulate, grow shiny new scar tissue across the gap. Only a memory of pain and horror left behind as a warning. The rift doesn't heal. It can be contained through hard, unglamorous work, which is why it was left to Sesheng Peak Station and the defenders living there. 1,000 barrier engines hold it back. Keep the rot from that festering, seething wound from touching the rest of the galaxy. But the engines can fail, and so a person has to watch over them, in case anything breaks through. And it does. Oh, it always does. See Moran in the garden level, fighting in the dim emergency lights. See him bleeding across the floor, and the stains splattered against what's left of the wall and the remains of the beautiful, orderly rows of plants. He has 9 seconds of air left. His gravity will last for 5 of those seconds. Now watch the blood, Moran's blood, lift off the leaves and walls and float in messy globules until the air escaping through the hole in the wall catches them and sends them spiraling out and away in frozen clumps. Tuaning, who for weeks has outsourced his emotions, good and bad, to a tiny, half-finished communication shell, is running through the red-lit halls of the station, which are empty because the station's residents are well aware of how to deal with an incursion. There are really 2 options. Hide in your quarters and pray the effects don't ripple out to your hiding space. Or die horribly, lost to vacuum, or eaten alive by whatever the rift decided to shit out this time. He reaches the garden level. Sealed off, of course, because the station AI has done its best to contain the incursion and save as many of its residents' lives as possible. Just as Shui Meng and Shimei do. Unlike Tuaning, they're in full armor, masked and ready to survive anything less than a direct railgun hit. Unlike Tuaning, they pause before trying to go inside. He slides within, slicing through the layers of the station's preservation commands in less than a breath, Tianwen already manifesting from the implant in his palm. What a dreadful, fascinating irony that the Haitang tree is the only one left standing. Not that Tuaning or Moran have noticed, but we can forgive them that, can't we? They're preoccupied, after all. Moran with not dying, Tuaning with finding him. But we can notice it, and smile, reassured. 2 seconds of air left. how cold it is in this part of the garden level, though not as cold as you'd think. The station is doing its best to keep all of itself alive, and Moran, who should have run when the bulkhead broke, who should have run 3 years ago, just as Tuan Ning told him to, is still grappling with that slippery, boneless nightmare, even as its claws tear him open. The shell of Xiaxini is darting around the struggling forms, trying to find a way to hurt the incursion without hurting Moran. You didn't think Tuan Ning had been idle on his way down to the garden level, did you? Of course he wasn't. He was fighting as best he could with every step. Anything for Moran. Anything to apologize for the colossal misunderstandings between them. But there's nothing Xiaxini can do, not against so much unleashed hate. Moran is strong, but he's slowing, all the air gone from his lungs, and there's more blood floating around him than there is within him. He keeps fighting, because keeping people safe is all he's ever wanted to do. If he can save one person, it's worth it. So he thought, as he disobeyed Tuan Ning 3 years ago, and so he thinks now. Moran, Tuan Ning calls. Pointlessly, it must be said, his voice is lost to vacuum. But Xiaxini calls out for him too, and that Moran hears. He looks up and across the ruined garden, to where Tuan Ning is running toward him, Tian Wen raised for a killing blow. He smiles, not at Xiaxini, but at Tuan Ning, who he never really hated, not once, not ever. How lucky for them both that human wounds can heal, even if we never feel it. Mao Shi, he says silently. Tuan Ning's heart is all light. If the rest of his life is just this, blood, cold, and terror, it would be worth it, just for Moran calling out to him with a smile on his face. The incursion shrieks. The answer to whether or not they're intelligent, or if they're piloted by something that is, will never be answered. And swells to 2, 3, 4 times its size. Chuan Ning reaches Moran's side just as their air runs out completely, and the incursion descends. Do they live? Of course they do. What kind of story do you think is being told here? They live. It's a close thing, but they live. And they will live, for many years to come. There's still so much for them to see and do, together. But before all that... According to Madame Wang, Moran lost a solid 60% of his blood before Shui Meng managed to drag him up to the medbay. Lucky for him, his implants are set up to deal with just that kind of scenario and sent him into a semi-coma until he got installed in one of the reparative chambers. A few regular infusions take care of the lost blood issue, but as for all his other problems, which include a nearly severed left leg, a concussion, and decompression sickness, only time and state-of-the-art medical assistance can help him. He also has one broken toe, which is more insult than injury considering everything else. Still, within 6 hours of regaining real consciousness, not the semi-awake state he was in when Madame Wang checked him for brain damage, he's out of bed and limping down to Tuan Ning's quarters with Shui Meng in tow. "You can't bother Chu Laoshi," his cousin yells, loud enough to scatter the repair crews filling the corridor. "I won't let you. I don't care that you nearly died. I will kill you if you annoy him. You'll be begging for that incursion to come back and finish the job before I'm..." Moran turns slowly, listening to his healing body creak as he moves, and presses a finger to Shui Meng's mouth. A flesh finger, since his prosthetic arm hangs useless at his side, all the connections broken. "Shh, Meng Meng, you're bothering the baby." "What baby?" says Shui Meng, his rage broken by honest confusion. "Me." Moran turns around and starts to hobble towards the lift. "I'm the baby." "Are you kidding me?" Shuimang shrieks.
What the fuck? That joke is literally 10,000 years old. I hate you. I wish you were dead. Leave Lao Shi alone.
He's so busy screaming that he doesn't watch where he's going. The collision with the repair tech gives Moran just enough time to slip into the lift and vanish, waving bye-bye as Shuimang disappears from view. Then he leans his head against the cool wall and lets out a long, shaky sigh. According to Madame Wang, Chu Anning checked himself out of medbay 12 hours before Moran did. Against her wishes, she stated, very clearly. Moran nodded along, and then did the exact same. And now he feels like five different kinds of shit, exactly like she said. But he couldn't lie in that bed and not do something. Say something. There was nothing he could do but obey the urge telling him to find Chu Anning, wherever he was. And if Chu Anning doesn't want to talk to him, when Moran does find him, then at least Moran tried, right? Right. Chu Anning lives on one of the oldest levels of the station, a truly unhip and uncomfortable place that's only notable for the lotus ponds dotting the mostly empty residential areas. Moran's only ever come this way as part of a punishment, organizing Chu Anning's library of actual books, for example. But he knows the way. Even if he didn't, he'd know he was on the right track when Xiaxinyi pops into being directly in front of him. His shell is gold again, but lit up by flashes of blue and green.
Moran, you should be back in medbay, he says, darting closer, then floating away as soon as Moran takes another step. Don't be stupid. You're still healing.
But Chu Anning checked himself out hours ago, he replies with an easy grin.
Your arm needs to be recalibrated as soon as possible.
Ah, that's a good point. Can you help with that, since you made it and all? Xiaxinyi freezes. His shell turns the forest green of pure terror. Yeah, I figured it out. He shrugs and rubs the back of his neck. Well, Shimei let it slip about the arm. He says he's sorry, by the way, but I probably should have known from the beginning, about everything. Xiaxinyi talked just like you, Chu Anning.
You, Moran, I'm your teacher.
Xiaxinyi's layers start to move again, the willow vines. Again, Moran should have figured this out ages ago, twisting in furious distress.
Shameless, disrespectful, you...
Is Lao Shi going to find a verb anytime soon? Moran asks sweetly.
Mo Wei Yu.
It should not be as endearing as it is, listening to Chu Anning's blistering temper pour out of a shell no bigger than Moran's hand. Moran can't help the fondness rising in him. He doesn't want to. His entire body feels like it's crawling with fire ants, and he's pretty sure he's bleeding again, but this is the best he's ever felt. For once, he's gotten it right. Sorry, he says. I'll stop teasing. I came down to say one thing, and then I'll go.
Moran would never just say one thing,
sulks Xiaxinyi. I'll do my best then. How's that? When Xiaxinyi, Chu Anning, doesn't interrupt, Moran takes a deep breath and makes the most formal, respectful bow his body will let him, hauling his prosthetic arm into place. It's not much, but hopefully the message comes across. I'm sorry, Chu Lao Shi, he says. I was unfair, unkind. I was wrong. I apologize for the disrespect and promise to make up for it from now on. He holds the bow as long as he can, till his back is screaming for relief and his eyes water. When he straightens up, Xiaxinyi is gone, and the door to Chu Anning's quarters is closed. Well, he did what he came here to do. Moran swallows the disappointment and shuffles around to get back to the lift. Maybe now they can build something better. It's too much to ask for a totally fresh start, but without the ball of anger in his chest, Moran can just be a good student. A good person, the kind who doesn't piss off Tuaning every chance he gets. He gets 3 steps before Xiaxini reappears, strobing between gold and white so fast it makes Moran dizzy. He disappears, then reappears.
Moran.
It's okay. Moran smiles. Nausher doesn't have to say anything. I was the one who needed to apologize. May you heal well. I'll stop bothering you now. Behind him, the door to Chuanning's quarters opens. It's so much easier talking through Xiaxini. Chuanning wishes he had thought of this years ago. He is tempted to use it for everything now, though Shui Zhengyong would protest if Xiaxini showed up for dinner instead of Chuanning. Strong as the temptation is, he pushes past it and forces himself to open the door. Shame boils through him. He knows he looks more disgusting than ever, and weaker, too, an old man who nearly died fighting off a single incursion. But Moran came all the way here, when he should have been healing, to offer the most unnecessary apology of all time. Surely Tuaning's face isn't so thin he can't offer his own apology in person. It very nearly is. When Moran begins to turn around, Tuaning almost shuts the door again. The fact he holds fast and doesn't takes a heroic amount of willpower. And it's worth every ounce of effort to see Moran smile at him, just for him, as Tuaning always dreamed. In the end, he says nothing at all. He does apologize in his halting, awkward way, flushed to his hairline and crawling out of his skin, but he does it hours later, in the quiet of the night cycle. Now he watches Moran approach, step by halting step, and even manages to take a step or two of his own, though his body aches and he limps pathetically the whole time. At least he feels like he's earned it, when Moran's hand finally touches him. Rough fingers weave through his own, warm, healthy tan against bruised paleness. No telling how long they stand there, Chuaning hardly daring to breathe in case it shatters the moment. He doesn't bother counting. Time itself stops mattering when Moran sighs his name and slips his arm around Chuaning's shoulders. A liberty shocking and presumptuous, and Chuaning melts into it, almost shaking with the need to be closer yet. He could never be close enough. Wanning, says Moran, his voice a gift in this quiet, abandoned part of the station. A sound that seems the foundation of all else in the universe, the force cleaving atoms together and pushing stars to ignite. Shameless, he says, hiding his face in Moran's chest. It hardly seems possible. It can hardly be deserved. But Moran just pulls him tighter, his body warm and undeniable against Chuaning's. Moran laughs. His fingers play up and down Chuaning's spine, careful of all his bruises. I am, he says. Especially for Wanning. How could I not be? He'll surprise Moran later with Xiaxini's neural shock, Tuaning decides, inhaling Moran's rich, inviting scent. But for now he will hoard this moment, and its joy. In 1,000 years, Sisheng Peak Station remains, guarding against the rift and everything within it. No one alive will remember Tuaning or Moran. The AIs will know them as useful data points, notable only for historical context. Deep in the garden levels, however, there will be a tree, well-tended and healthy, like all the trees on Shoshong Peak. If one looks closely, and one would have to look closely indeed, one may catch a glimpse of something swift and golden, well hidden in the flowering branches. A secret, perhaps, or a memory, hard to say. But it remains, and will remain, until Shoshong Peak is nothing but atoms and the rift itself has died, until the last silent stars burn out. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. And if you've enjoyed my Podfic, you're also welcome to leave me feedback. I'd love to hear from you. This Podfic was recorded for Voice Team 2025 as part of the Fresh New Sound Challenge, which is a challenge to do a voice that you've never done before as a narrator. So I was excited to get to record this to try and do something I hadn't before in voicing Xia Sani. I hopefully have managed that. This is sort of a combination of my art voice from Murderbot, thinking in the AI terms, but then like pitched up and make that child and cutesy. It was much harder to maintain over the course of the fic than I expected, so hopefully it sounds consistent enough to be enjoyable. And then there was also the incursion voice, which I had forgotten was in this fic, so I went a little harder on that than I might have otherwise and did a different sort of creepy than I have tried before. So hopefully those were enjoyable. It was at least interesting on my end to try and experiment with stranger voices than I usually do in ways I haven't done before, since I'm normally just narrating human character voices and differentiating between them. So this was fun. Yeah. And thanks for listening.